everyone, and welcome to First Things First. It is Friday. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We got a stacked show for you today. The Patriots could be planning for life after Tom Brady. We've said that a couple years now. The Cowboys might have a new All-Pro coming to town. We got to start in New Orleans with a scary moment for Anthony Davis. Pelicans were hosting the red-hot Oklahoma City Thunder last night when AD left the game just before the first half ended with a shoulder injury, left the game, and then kept on leaving until he left the arena. Davis has been in an awkward spot in New Orleans ever since demanding a trade, and Pelicans head coach Alvin Gentry is done talking about it. Done.
This whole thing has been a dumpster fire, you know, and it's just hard. You know, for guys, you know, we want guys to be professional and we want them to do this, but it's hard for guys, you know, to go through what they've been through. And to be able to come out and be the team of that quality, I'm happy for all the guys. I just thought that they did a great job. I don't know if he left the building or not. I have no idea. Then he left the building. I'm happy for the guys that, you know, that played the game and we won. Hey guys, I'm going to talk about the guys that played. They did a great job. We found a way to win the game. That's what's important.
All right, see, what do you make of what happened last night? I feel like things are just getting messier and messier in New Orleans.
It's always a tough situation because typically in these professional organizations, there's typically a separation between the front office and the coaches and the players in the locker room. But when Anthony Davis, when you asked or request a trade the way he did, you put both of those entities in disarray. From the coaching staff standpoint, they don't know what to do because they're supposed to create an environment every day that they can try to win. Last year, they were a playoff team. They're not supposed to be where they are this year. So trying to stay positive with these players, and people talk about, well, they got guaranteed contracts. Go do your job. Hey, there's a lot of people going to do their job, and they're not happy. And the better environment you can create for them to do their job, the more people are productive. The people are able to reach their potential within their job. So Anthony Davis has put them in a tough spot. None of these trade requests, even though they are the norm now, we've seen this the last three seasons, the impact on all three of the players, it was not positive at the beginning. Let's go with Paul George. Man, this is a guy, a small town guy. He's not an L.A. guy. He wasn't born in Los Angeles. He's born in California, but he's not the big light. So we thought Indianapolis with the Pacers were a perfect fit for him. He demanded a trade. Man, it really affected him because he was part of the media. Then Kawhi. I know Kawhi. I know the people that handle Kawhi. This was not, look at all the bad press Kawhi got last year. Yeah. We thought Kawhi didn't want to play. He was really hurt. And then this year we got another elite basketball player requested a trade. The Pelicans are in a bad spot. When they did not trade him, they set up for the second half of the season ending up like this. So I know Magic said that they weren't really engaged in it. Were they really genuine in trying to trade him? They should have traded him if they wanted to be able to avoid this, because when you leave the player in the building, nothing good is going to happen. That's why I liked last year Kawhi, because he couldn't play. People were trying to force him to play. He removed himself.
They should have. Every step of the way, the Pelicans have botched this. They botched their transactions starting 7 years ago after they drafted Anthony Davis. That's how they have a worse record since then than the team that got Michael Kidd-Gilchrist with the second pick of the Anthony Davis draft, the then Charlotte Bobcats. They botched the realistic plan last offseason when they said they could have last offseason said, you know what, the writing is on the wall here. We have to either go all in on this year, overpay Boogie, deal with the injury, find a way to bring Rondo back and run it back, or we have to start fielding trade offers for Anthony Davis now.
Anthony Davis did tell the Pelicans, you should sign Boogie Cousins.
Right. And they could. Everything's been a half measure. Last offseason, when Kyrie still had a year left on his deal and was not flirting with other teams, what would Boston have given up for a guaranteed 2 years of Anthony Davis? Tatum would have been on the board immediately. The Kings pick this year, the Grizzlies pick. The Lakers would have obviously given all the assets, which at the time probably looked better than they do now. I was thinking about the Memphis Grizzlies this morning. The number four pick of last year's draft, plus Mike Conley, if you wanted to do, they would have had a lot of options. They obviously didn't go with that option, and they didn't go with the go-all-in option, bring back Anthony Davis. And then at the deadline, another half measure. I know you wanted to reportedly reverse tamper with the Lakers. What you should have done is either trade AD or the moment he requests a trade, hold a press conference and say, we are not trading him. No one should call us. We are going to offer him an extension this summer. And if he doesn't sign it, we're not trading him this summer either. Now, maybe that you do trade him that summer, but you put an end to it. We are at the time. You know what? We're four games. I think they were 4.5 games out of the last playoff spot. They weren't going to make it. But you say, we're going for it. Every step of the way, the Pelicans have botched this. And now Anthony Davis, to your point, C, is feeling the repercussions of having his media image change a bit. Last night didn't help.
And, Nick, you make a great point as far as now you set the table for the organization and the coaching staff that they can teach guys every day. They can tell guys, well, we had the press conference yesterday. That's our stance. They can be more consistent in their messaging, and you don't get to this point. Because this is what I found out. Most of these stars... And LeBron James, he confessed to it. Man, I'm not the bad guy.
They don't want to be the bad guy.
They don't want to be the bad guy. KD, as much as he's got this now with the media and everything, I mean, they don't want to be the bad guy. And I could understand
that. You want to be adored. Who would rather be booed than cheered?
I mean, you're being paid an exorbitant amount of money to play a game that you love. Now, when you're in a situation like Anthony Davis, there are no home games. He's being booed at home. He's being booed on the road. People, fans will never be able to identify with, man, it looks selfish. Every time a player requests something like this, it looks selfish. But at some point as an NBA player, you have to take control of your career because you can't depend on the Pelicans to create a championship atmosphere around you.
So tell me where we are right now. He has this injury last night. It's probably a contusion or a shoulder bruise, if you will. He will most likely be back. But is it in his best interest to come back? The optics of him leaving the arena with his agent, I'm sure, weren't great. What do the Pelicans want? What do you think Anthony Davis wants?
The Pelicans now should revisit what they should have revisited once they decided not to trade him, which is what the NBA say, 100 grand a game.
Yep.
Okay, 27 games, $2.7 million. Here's the check. We're not playing him. You know, it sounds like a lot, but when you say what the totality of it is, because now they got 25.
That is the ultimate protection on the asset, too.
And now he's hurt again, even if it's minor. And I know he had wanted to play in the All-Star
game.
And
this is the thing. He could have his shoulder dislocated, or it could be a contusion, which is a bruise. Now, as a fan, what are we going to believe when it comes out?
And so if I'm the Pelicans, I use this injury as a way to keep him out of the lineup. And then maybe we've got 21 games left. And we talk after the break. Why are we? What is the good that can come of us playing him? Winning games is not good for the Pelicans. Anthony Davis can't. It's not like he has to show the league how good he is to enhance his trade value. It can only hurt his trade value, and it can only hurt Anthony Davis.
At this point, because we talk about as a group just how popular the NBA is, what great stories they have, how exciting it is. Outside, imagine if we had some mystery with who was going to win the championship. It seems like, to me, Jenna, what do you think the Pelicans should do? In this situation, with Anthony Davis, with all the optics, what we've been through the last year, because no one was happy with the Kawhi situation. Paul George, we're on the other side now, and we're starting to see his ability play out. But what would you like to see happen?
Nobody wins, in my opinion, if he plays. Nobody wins. He doesn't win, and the Pelicans don't win. You're right. You have an asset. Hold on to it. Protect it. At this point, maybe you don't get what you thought you were going to get. Maybe you do. But playing him and risking another injury, I think, makes it even worse.
The only way that Lakers offer isn't there is if he suffers a major injury. Their worst-case scenario, if they want to look at it, is the Lakers offer. But this is also when people were – when there was a lot of commentary about, of course you wait for the offseason. Of course you wait to see what the Celtics offer, who gets the Zion pick. That made a lot of sense. But the other side of that equation was these are real human beings. There are almost 30 more games to be played. There are other people involved. And you have nights like a couple nights ago where they get blown out and Anthony Davis scores 3 points. Nights like last night where they have their single best win of the year. Russell Westbrook had a 44-point triple-double. And the Pelicans beat him without Anthony Davis.
And no one in New Orleans saw it. Right. No one was at the game.
Julius Randle was great. He's the guy you signed this offseason. None of it matters because of the specter of Anthony Davis. That was the argument to trade Anthony Davis. One last point before we go.
Yeah.
I saw them walking down the hallway. Like, so was LeBron there? Like, was Ron leading Rich Paul and Anthony Davis?
This was not on LeBron. You're right, Nick. This was not on LeBron.
So these are grown-ups making their own decisions.
Grown-ups making their own decisions, to your point.
It'd be long puppet strings, LeBron, all the way from Los Angeles.
Take a break. Coming up, could the Patriots look to replace Tom Brady sooner rather than later?
Pushed him on out.
I just did.
That is next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We are back right after this. Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including many of the world's most popular self-improvement shows, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and even learn how to feel balanced while meditating. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance back into your life. So start the year off right and start listening to podcasts on Spotify. Welcome back. We'll get to Tom Brady in a second, but first, Pelicans, Thunder, Frank Jackson driving to the bucket, dunks on the entire team.
You see a lot of bodies there, but nobody really wants to get in the way. Come on, Ray. Is that Ray Felton? Come on, man. Do something. I mean, you're there. Don't get out the way.
Hawks and Knicks and DeAndre Bembry attacking the rim. The left-handed jam.
Yeah, as you'll know, last night we didn't have the best highlight package, so we're trying to make the best of nothing.
Not a lot of games.
The Knicks a lot of big plays.
Knicks get a rare win. Luke Kornet shows up in the highlights as he typically does, getting boomed on by somebody.
More from
another
this
Knicks Hawks.
Trae Young finding 2019 slam dunk contest. John Collins for
nice
the alley-oop.
Absolutely. Trae Young's such a good passer. Oddly enough, once he gets his three-point shooting up, he's going to be – I mean, he's already showing you the makings of a really good NBA player.
Collins could be a surprise in the dunk.
Oh!
Stop it.
Magic Hornets, Terrence Ross driving baseline.
Man, I thought Terrence Ross had lost this. Woo!
Okay.
What was it, Jenna?
Filthy. No?
No, that's good. That's perfect.
You got it. That's
dirty. Unsanitary.
No. Yeah. Oh. Just leave it. Filthy. That was perfect.
It's what?
Filthy.
That was great. I didn't see this last night. I will admit, this is the first time I'm seeing this. Wow. I know the Magic blew out the Hornets. Hornets started their All-Star break early.
Moving on to the NFL now. Tom Brady now has 6 big flashy rings as proof that he has won 6 Super Bowls. This last one is the oldest quarterback to ever do it at age 41. But it looks like the Patriots, despite their euphoria, could be looking for Brady's successor. According to Peter King, there's a good chance the Pats draft that quarterback in this year's draft. What do you think, Nick? Good plan, bad plan?
I'm not a big believer, typically, of the mid-round quarterback selection. I know Russell Wilson worked out. I get it. But I think you can get
I still think Russell at the third round, that's a high draft.
Absolutely. But I'm including third round in what I would consider mid-round. 3, 4,
okay.
5.
Okay, yes.
Because you can get all pro, certainly Pro Bowl caliber players at different positions. You get Kareem Hunt was a third round pick, won the rushing title. Like, you can get really good players other spots there.
Yeah, I was a fourth round.
And in the supplemental draft for different reasons, but sure. It's incredibly rare you get a starting quarterback in that spot. We've seen them be undrafted. We've seen them be the very end of the draft like Brady. And then we see a bunch of first-round picks. So, in general, I don't think that is a good use of draft resources. That's first of all. Second of all, this is not the type of draft where you would anticipate where the Pats are sitting at 32, even if they move up 5, 8, 10 spots. It's not last year where there's 5 potential first-round picks.
And then there was like Rudolph.
At quarterback.
What's his name the Steelers took?
Mason Rudolph.
There were a couple others.
That's a guy, by the way, that I think that's probably a wasted pick. The Steelers, a guy I like, Josh Dobbs. Like, you spend a premium pick on a guy who's probably projects to be a backup. But I also think this, see, with respect to your guy, Peter King, I think it is a fool's errand to predict anything the Patriots are going to do in the draft. Because last year, the thing about the draft we all seemed unanimous on was, of every team, what we know is the Patriots will draft a quarterback. They traded away Brissett. They traded away Garoppolo. Brian Hoyer is almost Tom Brady's age.
Yes.
They have these extra picks. Of course they're drafting a quarterback. And they didn't take one until Danny Etling in the seventh round, which is just a flyer throwaway. So I am not as convinced as Peter King that the Patriots will draft a quarterback. And I don't know that this is the draft to do it.
And I'm not certain that the replacement for Tom Brady, I know this might be shocking, it might not come through the draft. The Patriots, they're not a great drafting team. We tell the Tom Brady story, but, man, they miss more than they hit in the draft. The best draft that they do is you play 2 or 3 years with another team.
Yes.
Let me get some film on you. Then I'll bring you into my building. That's the way that I have seen them do on a regular and more consistent basis. Yes, they draft offensive linemen. They draft linebackers. They draft, yeah, because they need those things. But if you look at most of their players, they come from, hey, man, let me get a retread here. Oh, he left him out on the curb. Let me try to see if I can get something. So I wouldn't be consumed with just the draft. This is not a great quarterback class. And I just believe they might do something out of the box.
What does that mean?
I wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots looked at a guy like Cap. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't have the intel that Peter King does, but I just think that they'll do it a different way. I know that the Crafts are very, very fond of Colin Kaepernick, and I know that situation that we've had as far as the national anthem, they wish that we would have never gone down that road. I'm just saying, outside the box, if someone will do it, it will be the people in New England compared to the conventional way. We get a guy in the second and third round, he sit behind Brady 2 or 3 years. I'm just open to that, and I believe that you should start looking at other situations besides the draft to how they're going to look to get Tom Brady's replacement.
Well, I was thinking about situations aside from the draft. Now, I wasn't thinking about Colin Kaepernick, even though I find that really interesting, and I think it would fit beautifully. But what about Josh Rosen? What about a guy you might be able to buy a little low on? A guy who could sit behind Brady when the Cardinals, with a new head coach, with all the buzz surrounding their coach and his feelings on Kyler Murray, that this isn't the guy that picked Josh Rosen. Mm-hmm. That Rosen, obviously, there would be no bigger discrepancy in going from being thrown into the fire as a rookie in Arizona and then the next year being able to sit behind the GOAT, learn from Belichick and McDaniels, watch and observe for a year or mm-hmm. two, a guy who I believe has checks all the boxes as far as throwing motion, accuracy, pedigree from high school to mm-hmm. college, all those things. Like, could you trade the 32nd pick and a third round pick, which they have extras of, to go get Josh Rosen, give the Cardinals a little extra ammunition if they want to move up from 12 to 7 or 6 in order so they can draft Kyler Murray? That, to me, fits what you're talking about, in where it's not necessarily through the draft, but you are also getting a young quarterback that fits the time horizon of Tom Brady potentially quite well.
So that's so interesting, because the question I was going to ask you is, if you're not going to go through the draft, do you look for a guy who is sort of similar to Tom Brady, so you don't change your system around too much, but you have a guy that can sort of move in there, and you have a cerebral quarterback like Josh Rosen, who actually seems to fit the bill. I don't know, probably as detailed as you mm-hmm. do, but it seems like that could be a smooth transition.
No. If you talk about some of the things he does off the field, he is a deep thinker. He wants more than football. I could see him working with Josh McDaniel and Bill Belichick. Yeah, I like it. That's a name that I didn't think of. The problem there is, does he think that Kyler Murray is a better quarterback than Josh Rosen? And I don't believe that they think that. Because now, if we had a Peyton Manning, if we had a guy in the draft that we thought was a top five pick, then I could see that being more of a realistic opportunity. But they are not just going to be consumed with the draft. They will look at free agency, other quarterbacks out there. I wouldn't be surprised they looked at Teddy Bridgewater, that he would be a name, a guy that in the pocket is going to deliver the football, plays on timing, don't need a big arm to build to play the position. I believe that with Tom Brady being your quarterback, what Bill Belichick will look for is traits. traits in a quarterback. That's what Mangini talks about when he sits here. And that, can a guy manage the game? Is he going to be the first guy in the building? Is he going to let us continue to play the Patriot way? Is he going to be unselfish? So there's a number of things that I think that they're looking at. And sometimes those young guys in the draft, and this year's crop is not a great crop of quarterback once you get through the first two. Do they take that chance?
One other name I'm going to throw out there, a guy who was there, but the Patriots had a need at wide receiver. They had another backup quarterback there at the time, but I think has shown that he can be a starter at one point in this league, and I think people think highly of, is Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett, like, Andrew Luck's healthy now. He is more valuable to teams other than the Colts than he is to the Colts. And I think Jacoby Brissett, like, when we were talking, I thought about the show after the show yesterday, when we were talking about what other options Denver would have had that would have been cheaper, that maybe would have had more upside. And I wish I would have brought up Jacoby Brissett there. I think he will be, when people see the price tag associated with Nick Foles, when people see whether or not Teddy Bridgewater is going to sign with New Orleans, re-sign before he even hits free agency, Jacoby, I don't think they traded him because they didn't like him. I think they had a need. Garoppolo
got great
was still
value
there.
For him.
They got great. They got a former first-round pick for him. And, like, he, I thought he acquitted himself quite well when he filled in for Andrew Luck the year before.
And I know my classmate Bill Parcells, he's mentored Jacoby. And he thinks that he's going to be a starter and a winner in this league. And he has a lot of those traits that we talked about, Brady-type traits, as far as being a guy playing from the pocket. He's been in that system, been in the building, so they've worked with him. I could see him also being like, I could sit behind Tom.
Of course.
And be able to trust the coaches and the ownership there.
You'd rather sit behind Tom than Luck, because Luck, you think, is going to play another 10 years.
Yes.
You know, like, if you want to be a starter at one point, sorry to interrupt, but, like,
that's okay.
It would make more sense to sit behind
the 41-year-old.
There's
a couple good names, though. Josh Rosen, Jacoby
Brissett.
It's a fun
conversation. It'll be an interesting conversation as we get closer to age 45 for Tom. Coming up, Scottie Pippen has some hot takes about LeBron. This you're going to want to hear. It's next on First Things First. Tomorrow, CC World Featherweight Champion Leo the Earthquake Santa Cruz putting his belt on the line against Rafael Big Bang Rivera, live at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tell you, being a featherweight, if you get a nickname Hurricane or Earthquake, you knocked out a lot of folks.
Yeah, man.
Back here on First Things First, we are going viral. So Juju Smith-Schuster found himself having a successful sophomore season, but he was still without love yesterday on Valentine's Day, posting these pictures to the gram with the caption, "It's another year without a Valentine. Someone give me a chance."
Wait, what?
It's a little...
What is he wearing?
Not much.
He's got a big towel on. He's got some shorts underneath. He's got the towel is over him. It's an oversized, like a beach towel.
Yeah.
Yeah, a plush towel. AB's going to be gone from Pittsburgh.
Chris, you're...
Expect a lot of... Juju,
listen,
on Twitter, Instagram.
And let me also translate. If Chris Carter right now were holding, if Juju Smith-Schuster was a stock and Chris Carter were holding shares, he would be quietly selling them right now. You think without AB, an extra man on the field essentially defensively.
Juju, call me, man.
We need to talk about some stuff.
Well, listen, I ain't got Valentine's takes, Jenna.
Well, I thought you said, let me explain it to you. So I'm waiting for it to tie into Valentine's Day.
There ain't no starting receiver in the NFL.
Don't you want me to understand it?
Okay, just stop it, man.
I steered it back to
sports. You ain't lonely, man. You just trying too hard on the gram.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. Time for your AT&T wake-up call. All-Star Game happens this weekend. Top five favorites to win the MVP are Giannis, KD, Kemba, Steph, and Joel Embiid. Nick, who do you think takes it home?
So, All-Star Game, your team doesn't have to win MVP.
No.
Giannis drafted his team poorly, so he and Russ are the best options there. But
he might play 38 minutes.
How about a dark horse? What about a hometown guy? What about Kemba Walker? Kemba, the game's in Charlotte. He's the lone representative from Charlotte. Like, I feel like he's going to get a lot of minutes because of that. He seems like he was thinking about the All-Star game last night when he went 4-for-20 and his team lost to the Magic.
Mm-hmm.
So, what about Kemba Walker's a dark horse?
Yeah, I like it, man. I think you're on to something. You're coming up with some good names for early in the show.
That.
I think you're on drugs, though, because the hometown favorite would be Steph Curry.
Well,
oh, okay.
In one way or another.
Oh, okay. Sure. Now, that's the real hometown favorite.
Yeah, tomato, tomato.
All right, it's just tomato. Back to last night. Good news. Russell Westbrook had 44 points and collected his 11th straight triple-double. Bad news, his team lost Thunder lost to a Pelicans team who didn't have Anthony Davis most of the game. Nick, what went wrong for them yesterday?
Bizarre game, because I understand Paul George wasn't very efficient, but he still added 28. Now was on nearly 30 shots. Russell was spectacular, but nobody else showed up. My guy Terrence Ferguson, where was he? Nerlens Noel did fine, but they didn't get enough, and they weren't playing any defense. You're going to see this night before All-Star break. Some guys, their heads might be elsewhere. The All-Stars heads are on the All-Star game, and the other guys are thinking about vacation. They're thinking about wherever exotic locale they are going to get out of Oklahoma City for a few days.
All the momentum that OKC had, too, going into the break. Paul George playing the best basketball we've ever seen. Bad loss for them last night.
Yep, absolutely right. For a team that, like you mentioned, didn't even have Anthony Davis for the second half.
To the Celtics now. They played last night. They won last night. They beat the Pistons to improve to 9-2 when Kyrie sits Wednesday, rather. However, Danny Ainge said it's completely illogical and makes no sense to think they are better without their star point guard. CC, do you agree?
I think I said the same thing yesterday. Danny's watching the show and everything. it doesn't make sense because it's about talent. But I'm watching the Celtics and them playing the way they playing, Danny. It don't make sense either. You should be a lot better. But your basketball team, regardless of what you want to say, and I know you can't tell the truth, the guy going to be a free agent. He halfway already to New York City. You can't tell the truth. The team has played better, though.
Listen, it's illogical. It is totally illogical.
Yes.
But over the last 2 years, they win 65% of their games with Kyrie and 70% of their games without Kyrie. Yeah. I can't figure it out. Especially because this year, Kyrie is playing the most team-oriented brand of basketball he's ever played. Career high in assists, seems to have bought in after the really tough start, but they're 9-2 this year without him. It does. Now, for Celtics fans, the silver lining here is next year you're going to get 82 games without Kyrie Irving, so you'll get to see this on an elongated scale.
You were off to such a good start.
I'm just letting them know. It's a bright side.
Yeah, finally,
building friends in New England again.
Scottie Pippen had some interesting words about LeBron James. Scottie Pippen said that the King doesn't measure up to Michael Jordan or Kobe as a player, citing that he lacks the clutch gene. Nick, what are your thoughts here?
Okay. So first of all, Scottie Pippen, this is just a terrible lack of take integrity by you. No consistency in your take, because I'm old enough to remember a few years ago when you said LeBron was better than Jordan, and a few years before that when you said you were better than Jordan, and now LeBron's not even better than Kobe. And
Nick, what justifies a change in opinion?
New facts, new information.
There you go.
And so since Scottie had said LeBron's better than Jordan, and now the knock is lack of a clutch gene, we saw just 6 months ago LeBron in a three-week span hit more playoff buzzer beaters than Kobe did in his entire career. Like, and Kobe hadn't been playing since this change in opinion happened. Here's the deal. See, you get a little irritated at times when I just announce
no,
my say.
No, never
as,
with you, man.
When I just say as a fact, LeBron's the greatest player ever. But here's the reality. There's five guys that you can make a credible case for because their specific case applies only to them. By that, I mean this. If you were to say, you know who the greatest player ever is? Wilt Chamberlain. You could argue it.
Yes.
Based on statistical dominance. Mm-hmm. If I were to say, what's the one word as to why Wilt's the greatest, you'd say stats. Bill Russell. You can argue it for him. Mm-hmm. He's the greatest winner ever. 11 championships in 13 years in the pros. So what's the argument for Russell? Championships. Kareem is the third guy you can make the argument for. The greatest start to finish of a basketball life anyone has ever had.
What did he accomplish in his first 4 years, Nick?
How about high school? Was the best player in the world.
Yep.
Goes to UCLA, isn't allowed to play his freshman year. And then once he is allowed to play, wins three championships. By his second year in the NBA, he's a finals MVP, league MVP, best player in the league. More points than anyone ever. Six titles, more MVPs than anyone ever. So for Kareem, it's the totality of the career. For Jordan, it's the apex. It's a decade of dominance unlike anything we've seen from 1988 to 1998.
Right. And it's also the merchandising, the showmanship. It's those things.
And if we had to associate one word with why Michael Jordan is the greatest ever, it would be invincibility. It's that it seemed like he couldn't be beaten. And then with LeBron, it's longevity. It's the fact that we have seen him take teams to the brink of championships that other guys would have missed the playoffs with in 07 with the Cavs, the year, his first year back with the Cavs after the injuries, the last year with the Cavs. It's the longevity. And if there was one phrase or word associated with LeBron, it'd be the all-around game. Those are the five guys. Like, Magic might be better than Wilt, but you can't make a case for Magic because Magic's decade of dominance falls short of Jordan's.
Right.
Kobe has a lot of similarities to Jordan, but you can't, you're not, he's not in the discussion.
Right, because then it's also, that's not only the numbers, it's about effective and efficient.
Yes.
How efficient they're playing basketball when you get to those.
And all of these guys, except for Wilt and Russell, are the unquestioned greatest of their era. Man, people need to start putting some respect on Tim Duncan's name. Tim Duncan and Kobe are the same era.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, Duncan had Popovich. Kobe had Phil Jackson. Duncan had great teammates. Kobe won 3 championships with Shaq. Duncan won 50 games every year of his career, except for the year the season was only 50 games. Kobe missed the playoffs and got bounced in the first round twice the following years. Duncan won 5 titles. Kobe won 5. Duncan has 2 finals, 3 finals MVPs. Kobe's got 2. Duncan's got 2 regular season MVPs. Kobe's got 1. So, like, we keep skipping over Tim Duncan when we're talking about this. And part of that, C, is because, let's say Jordan never existed. Just he played baseball forever. And the greatest player ever was considered Kareem. Then I feel like people would respect Duncan more because Duncan would remind you of him.
Absolutely.
But instead, because Jordan existed and Kobe reminded you of
Jordan. And we were looking for the next Jordan.
Absolutely.
As always.
And so, but so your guy Pip, who I know it's your guy, like.
Right, but it's hard to do television also when you're wearing a Michael Jordan brand sweatsuit. So, it's a lot easier to drink the Kool-Aid when you're there making it.
Mm-hmm.
So Scotty, he doesn't have any consistency. Scotty does have a tremendous amount of credibility because he played with so many great players and he was part of that. But it's impossible to go to 8 straight championships and not be clutch. So what you're saying, it doesn't make sense. So I can understand you heard someone else say that, but you can't prove that to be true.
And as we were saying earlier, with new information, you can develop new opinions. As of the end of the NBA Finals against the Mavericks, LeBron was everything but clutch. That is a fair critique. He melted down in his biggest moment. But since then, from that moment to now, he has more playoff buzzer beaters than anybody in history. He has more regular season buzzer beaters than Kobe if we want to do clutch stuff. He averages more points in elimination games and game sevens than any player in history. Those are all the clutch situations we saw last year's playoffs. The clutch stuff should be the only clutch associated with LeBron in a negative way is these days the agency that people don't like, and that's clutch with a K.
Would you believe that Nick actually knows more about hockey than basketball?
Yeah, we just don't talk about it on the show.
Kind of.
I've got some Bobby Orr takes that
work time. He can't represent a lot of their players.
I remember
and
a lot
if
of
you know
things.
His law firm.
Jerome again.
They
moving
like
on to the Lakers
it
now.
It's difficult.
With a record below 500 and at 3 games out of the playoff picture, this is certainly not where they thought they'd be. Injuries, lack of player development, rumblings of a coaching change, and we're just at the All-Star break. It is the latest into a season LeBron has been below 500 since his rookie year. Nick, with 25 games left, what has to now happen for the team to make the playoffs, in your opinion?
See, they got to come out of the All-Star break on fire. Here's what they got out of the All-Star break. Houston, then New Orleans, Memphis, New Orleans again, Milwaukee, Phoenix, and then the 7th game after the break's the LA Clippers, the team they are chasing for the 8th spot. Like, if they are not 4-2 minimum going into that Clippers game, then the final 20 games of the year, 18 games of the year are going to be meaningless. Like, I have that Clippers game circled. Everyone should. They will be favored against New Orleans, Memphis, New Orleans again, and Phoenix. The Anthony Davis might not have even been playing for New
they
Orleans.
They were favored against the Hawks.
Well, listen, that was a terrible loss, which is they can't have any more of those. Because at the end of the year, the schedule gets real tough. No more bad losses for the Los Angeles Lakers. And come out of the All-Star break hot. To me, that's the formula to give them a real shot.
The real part to that formula is what's going to be their psyche. What's going to be their attitude of these young players? Are we going to sit around and continue to complain? Oh, they were talking about trade me. Yeah, if you're a good player, if you're part of an organization in professional sports, at some point in your career, they're going to be talking about trading you. They were talking about trading you for one of the top five players in the world, though. It's not like they were trying to trade you for some
salary dump.
So they need to be able to get remove that from their mind and just try to be the best basketball player. So that, to me, is the number one thing that they must do. Number two is they got to stay healthy. I don't care what you say. If they don't have their bodies, they're not deep enough to be able to sustain the types of injuries that they have. So if they're healthy, they're going to be in the playoffs. And I think that all of us, myself included, missed out on how important Lonzo Ball was going to be defensively. Because when you look at him, Josh Hart, Tyson Chandler, those are the three best defenders that they have. We didn't think that the impact of him being out would be felt on the defensive end. So since like the third week in January, they have been one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA after being surprisingly a top 10 defensive team. So that part right there, it's about a mindset for these younger players. And don't get too called up in Mangini. Don't look at Nick. Don't look at the dang on schedule. Just play them out night by. We don't have enough focus. We saw that in Atlanta, Jenna.
Yeah.
To be looking down. Hey, you know who we got next Wednesday? Man, let's get it done tonight. It starts with a singular mindset in these younger players. Let's stop making excuses. Also, they need some luck on their side from an injury standpoint.
All right, so you mentioned the two big things. One, those young players. Number two, the injuries. But would a close third be LeBron James re-engaging as we need him to do, or the Lakers needed to do after the All-Star break, especially since there were no real changes made at the trade deadline.
So it's really odd because that Hawks game, for example, he had 28 points, 11 rebounds, and 16 assists, and would have had his career high in assists if they just made layups. Would have been 20-plus assists. I mean, it was on layups. First play of the game to late in the game. Kuzma, who's been their second-best player, was blowing them the entire game. He wasn't the only one. So I don't feel like LeBron's been disengaged. But LeBron has made the choice of, we are going to, and maybe it's strategic, maybe it's because if we're going to do anything in the playoffs, the other guys are going to have to make big shots. Mm-hmm. He's made the choice of, I'm going to let you guys do it. The way I'm going to engage is I'm going to get the offense going, and I'm going to get my assists up. I'm going to get you the ball. But to answer your question, yeah, against that, when I say that Clippers game, LeBron needs to have the mentality in that game. Let's go for 40. Like, because you don't have the luxury of, we are building towards something, so maybe we take a loss here that we shouldn't because I'm going to let Kuzma try to run this. Every single game is critical. You are three back with 25 to play. Three back of the eighth spot. Forget the seventh spot. So I think that's where it re-engaged or maybe a slightly different approach than he's had post-injury.
If I am the coaching staff, I'm going to put more pressure on LeBron, on Rondo, on guys like that, because LeBron was in the same spot last year. Now, they didn't have the same record, but if you look at making a trade, they made a couple trades, but the Lakers didn't make a trade, but the organization was in disarray, and LeBron had to start cooking with grease down at the end, and he played basketball those last 10, 15 games like they were getting ready for this playoff. The biggest question is, how healthy is LeBron James right now? Is he at 80% right now? How hard is he going to be able to go these last 25 games? That's what I need to see. And if he's at 100%, which I don't think he is, it's going to be a problem for the Lakers coming down the stretch.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, the latest turn in the Anthony Davis saga. That's ahead on First Things First. There's some pregame notes
I'm so sorry.
No, back here on First Things First, Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott joins us now. What's up, Bart?
CeCe just reminded me that this was his show. I can't shout out
too much. Well, he reminds us that every single
morning. Even Michelle got to sing a song. Beyonce can't be up front all the time. You got to rest your voice, Chris.
Hey, I love my partner, but let's not compare him to the greatest living American Beyonce.
I wasn't even talking about Cardi B. Big news for Lamar Jackson this week.
She's not the greatest living American. She's the embodiment of the American dream.
He will not be looking over his shoulder this coming season. The starting job at quarterback is his. That after the Ravens agreed to send Joe Flacco off to Denver. Lamar led the Ravens to the playoffs last season, going 6-1 down the stretch. Baltimore's offensive coordinator says he's already at work putting together a Lamar-friendly offense. Bart, you trust Lamar Jackson as the starter for a full season now?
No, I don't. Lamar Jackson has a lot to prove. He's got to learn that he can throw the ball with accuracy, and he got to show that he can throw the ball from the pocket. I think he was exposed against the Chargers, showing that if you put enough athletes out there that you can stifle him and confuse him with guys that can play complex coverages, and also concerned with his health. Now, Greg Roman was there with me when Jamal Lewis ran for 2,000. He also was in San Francisco when Colin Kaepernick tore the league up.
Yep.
But what happens is Colin Kaepernick is a much bigger body type than Lamar Jackson, so he can't get away with some of the sins that Colin Kaepernick was able to do. He's going to have to look at some Russell Wilson film and learn how to protect himself, because we saw him get dinged up late in games, not be able to finish games. And if you do that, you look at what they have as far as free agency. Their backup is RG3. He's still unproven, and I don't know if I want to go into my season saying, okay, we're all in, and I don't know if RG3 is a guy that can come in. He's a free agent, by the way. And that's the biggest issue as well, because you lose Joe Flacco and you hope to get some salary cap relief back so that you can go out and get some more weapons for Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to sign C.J. Mosley. That should be priority number one, because this Ravens defense has never operated without an elite inside linebacker.
Well, so here's the thing. I am rooting for Lamar, and I think we saw enough positives to say the Ravens feel good about the pick they made. It's one of the reasons they move off Joe Flacco, that they like moving forward with him. But he rushed the ball 16 times per game last year. Cam's career high is 8 per game. Russell Wilson's career high, 7 per game. Vic's career high was 7 per game. So he was double the other running quarterbacks' career highs. Mm-hmm. If we look at the most rush attempts by a quarterback in the last 30 years in any game, he's got 3 of the top 4. And if we extended it to 5, he's tied for 5th with a 17 rush attempt game. So, see, the way they are going to have to adjust to where that was the featured part of his game to where that is just going to be an additional part of his game is the biggest adjustment. You were talking before the show about certain things that you and Randy did in Minnesota as far as stacking on one side of the field that really helped Randall Cunningham.
Yes.
Things that made it to where it was more simple and to where it was harder to defend. The defense had to basically tell you what they were doing by the personnel on the field that you think could help him, that I think you can explain better.
Right.
Because I know he's not going to be able to rush the ball 15 times a game again. Like, you can't. You will get injured doing that in this league.
Both of you guys make great points, especially the illustration, the graphic, as far as the number of times. And in this league, he already has 3 of the 4 highest totals that we've seen. He doesn't have the type of body that's going to be able to last through that type of... So we understand that. Bart, as one of the great defenders in this league, Bart understands, too, from a formation of what you're saying. When we had Randall Cunningham, the knock on Randall was reading coverages and him getting locked in on one receiver. Brian Billick said, okay, no problem. I don't have to worry about that. I'm going to put you and Randy on the same side of the field. Yep. So if he wants to get locked in on you, we're okay with that. But also, we came up with some runs that we could dictate, running formations that we could dictate when they were going to play cover 3, when they were going to play cover 2. So what that does, it speeds up the read of the quarterback. So, you know, if I get in this formation, they can only play a couple things. So instead of him dropping back and reading on the run, which you normally have to do, it's already dictated. They can only play certain things. So I just believe that Greg Roman, and you pointed out with Jamal Lewis and that big running attack, and when he was in San Francisco with Cap, that running attack was not necessarily always the quarterback. All right, they had on a conventional running game, which I believe Baltimore must do. And I think one of the nuggets that you said, and people can't lose sight of this, don't lose your team identity. The most important signing this offseason is C.J. Mosley. You need him in that middle linebacker spot so that you can be a top 5 defense. Because if you're not a top 5 defense, his lack of being able to throw the ball down the field, it will be exposed.
It has to be one score games for them. Yeah. Like, they, because if you're going to play this style of offense, it has to be buttressed with a great defense.
Right.
Like, you can't, because if your defense is going to be a team that all of a sudden you could be down 13-0 to start a game, that is, you might say, well, what team can come back from that? We know what teams can come back from
exactly.
that. We know the Chiefs, the Saints, the Rams, over the course of the year, if they were down 2 scores, it's not ideal, but they are able to catch up in a hurry. They're not going to be able to catch up in a hurry against anybody in year 2 of Lamar Jackson.
And what CC's talking about, he's talking about flooding zones with receivers, making the reads, predetermining the reads for him by formation. And Greg Roman has always been great. If you ever remember when Colin Kaepernick and they were going under Harbaugh, it was a lot of shifts and motions, right? So they shift, motion, see what you do, see what type of, you know, line, how you adjust to it. And that dictates, you know, two plays if it's a run or a pass. But Lamar Jackson is going to have to make a conscious decision to make sure that he can get better from the pocket. They're going to have to do some things where they do boots, waggles, much like, you know, Gary Kubiak used to go do with Schaub, where it's throwbacks and comebacks, and it's flooding, you know, he's flooding the front side of the zone, and then everybody from the back side of the zone is coming into his into his view, so he doesn't have to scan the field and locate the safety.
How much more of a disadvantage is he because of how well Lamar Jackson played down the stretch, whereas a guy like Sam Darnold, maybe there's not as much pressure coming into this season because you know what the Jets did last year. You're going to expect the Baltimore Ravens to come out with a great defense and for Lamar Jackson to at least be a little bit of a shell of himself from last year.
All these quarterbacks that we saw last year have a tremendous learning curve going from year one to year two. But the part that Lamar's going through is the hardest part. Because ever since he's been a little boy, he's been the fastest dude on the field. Yep. He's been running the ball just like he was running until he started getting clocked at the end of those games. So that natural instinct, we saw that with Michael Vick. We have seen that with these guys that are dual threats. Where Sam Darnold and them is, they understand. I'm not good enough to be trying to be athletic. This game is going to happen from the pocket. So what they have to improve on is easier to do than what Lamar has to prove on. What Greg Roman and this offense, what they have to do when you have a dual threat quarterback like Lamar, you got to create some big plays because you can't drive 12, 14 plays. Yep. If I can get a big play in there, if I can flood a zone where I can have a deep, an intermediate and a shallow cross, then I can throw the ball deep. And if the deep is not there, I can come to the intermediate because of play action and other things, how the defense is going to react. So you have to make sure you generate big plays for a quarterback like Lamar because it helps that offense continue to churn first downs and touchdowns.
I also think, as minor as it might seem, I think the fourth quarter of that playoff game was really important for him this offseason because he was playing as poorly as we've seen a quarterback play in a playoff game since his predecessor Joe Flacco's three-completion playoff game that I think they actually won against, I forget who it was against, but it didn't matter. And then in the fourth quarter, all of a sudden he got in a bit of a rhythm. The fans weren't calling for Flacco anymore. Like you saw, so he went into the postseason with a little bit okay. I, at least by the end of the game, figured something out.
Also, let's not forget, because sometimes we just lose perspective on our expectations, these quarterbacks. Last year at this time, Lamar Jackson, people were questioning, he should change his position. He should go to the combine and be a DB. He should go to combine and be a wide receiver. Now he's the starting quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens, one of the stellar franchises that we've seen in this, in the league the last 20 years. So let's just give him a little bit of credit how far he's come in a year, and let's just give him some more time to continue to develop, to continue to grow, because he's earned that. He unseated Joe Flacco. They traded Joe Flacco. That's a credit to him. If they believe in his overall ability, let's put some weapons around him. All those other offenses that we talked about, you talked about with Jamal Lewis, running attack and a tight end that was explosive. So let's utilize the young tight end that we have there in Baltimore, get some weapons on the outside. I believe that this is just the beginning of Lamar Jackson making that transition and trying to be a pocket passer.
See, but it's like when you had your girlfriend and you broke up with her for a reason, but then the longer she's away, the more you miss her, the better she was. That's how they're going to be about Joe Flacco, right? The longer Joe Flacco's away, they're going to remember that he went to five straight playoff appearances, that he only missed the playoffs three times in 11 years, that he won a Super Bowl MVP. So I think it's more pressure on Lamar Jackson than it is on any other of the second-year quarterbacks coming into this year. And I think he's ill-equipped to be able to carry the team like those other players are because they've always been able to play through the pocket. You think about Baker Mayfield. Yeah, he's a mobile quarterback. He can hurt you with his legs, but he's more dangerous from the pocket. Lamar Jackson's going to have to make a decision how he's going to be, and they're going to have to put an offense around him, but I don't know if they have enough weapons around him to be able to win one-on-one. They don't have an elite receiver. Michael Crabtree is a good possession receiver, but you talk about generating these shots. John Brown is a free agent, so they're going to have to figure out how to go out there and use some of that money that they're going to get back from Joe Flacco and get him a number one receiver that he can win down the field with so that he can take shots. because he's not a guy that can that's going to be able to have a high completion rate unless it's little check down Charlie stuff. He's going to have to be able to take shots down the field in explosive plays.
I dare you, the day after Valentine's Day, you're looking back into the past.
Yeah, talking about exes, man.
What you think your wife is going to say? Man, you got to keep your eyes on the future.
And it's easy to forget.
Nothing's ever happened in the past.
Lit your stuff on fire the last 5 years like Flacco did for the Ravens, man. You ready to move on.
Hey, but he got you the championship. That's all that matters.
As long as you don't have any pictures in your phone of them. Bart, we'll see you a little bit later on the show.
Let me raise that.
Jenna out here telling on herself. Why are you telling on yourself, Jenna?
Anthony Davis-Smith. We're going to talk about more sports next on First Things First. There's got nothing in there.
She sure could cook.
Now, for say what? Magic Johnson has gotten in trouble for some of his recent comments about different players around the league. Now, he just doesn't want any more problems with the league office. Say what?
The question I have to ask you about Kemba Walker.
You know, I can't answer any questions about no players because every time I do it, I get fined. But anybody else do it, they don't get fined.
Magic. Come on now. Look, you can't. The league office isn't picking on you. Oh. Now, the Ben Simmons thing. That was misreported by some.
Yes.
It was Ben Simmons and the Sixers that initially reached out, and Elton Brand had to come out and clarify that he wasn't tampering with Ben Simmons. But Magic goes on these late shows and does some tampering. Yeah, I mean, it's just what he does.
Your guy Colin Cowherd wants the special "That's Just" rule for Magic Johnson. That's just Magic Johnson.
Oh, I hadn't heard that from my guy.
That's what he does. That's just Magic Johnson.
Look, I mean, it's hard being Magic Johnson. Magic comes in right here. Him and I are going to be talking. It's like, I'm not available for the Lakers and everything. It's tough being Magic Johnson and running the Lakers.
But that was, listen, heady play by Magic, because that's the time where you get tripped up. You're on a red carpet.
Yes.
You're doing something else.
Not the sport.
And it's just real quick to be like, Kimba's a great player. There's $50,000.
Man, that's Magic Johnson, man. The red carpet ain't no. You two weirdos on the red carpet is something else. That's Magic Johnson.
Can I tell a story real quick? Just real quick. I had an NBA front office guy I did an interview with back in my radio career a long time ago. And I asked him a question about a current player in the league. And he gave effusive praise about the player. And he texted me right when the interview was over. And he said, please, 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 can you not podcast that? He's like, I realized halfway through my answer I was tampering. It's going to cost me $50,000 if that goes out. Now, I pulled it back. The next day, I regretted it. I should have been like, yeah, I can do that. That'll be
$10,000.
That'll be $10,000. But I didn't do that. I did the right thing there.
I'm glad that that's what you still think about.
What? Yeah, of course. That's 10 G's, Jenna.
Pelicans were
that's
hosting the Red Hot Thunder last night when Anthony Davis left the game just before the first half ended with a shoulder injury, left the game, and then basically kept on leaving until he left the arena with his agent. Davis has been in an awkward spot in New Orleans ever since demanding a trade, and Pelicans head coach Alvin Gentry is done talking about it.
This whole thing has been a dumpster fire, you know, and it's just hard. You know, for guys, you know, we want guys to be professional and we want them to do this, but it's hard for guys, you know, to go through what they've been through. And to be able to come out and be the team of that quality, I'm happy for all the guys. I just thought that they did a great job. Don't know if he left the building or not. I have no idea. Then he left the building. I'm happy for the guys that, you know, that played the game and we won. Hey guys, I'm going to talk about the guys that played. They did a great job. We found a way to win the game. That's what's important.
Look, see, it's become a bit of a sticky situation now in New Orleans. What do you think is the best way for this to be handled moving forward?
It's been an awful situation. The coach is right. It hadn't been fair on the organization. Hadn't been fair on the players. Hadn't been fair for Anthony Davis. But you have to realize now, you made a big boy move now. You don't want to force it. You didn't have to do this. You made a big boy move, and these are some of the big boy pains. And we saw this. I personally saw it last year. People questioning Kawhi. People questioning the people around him. Questioning his sports integrity. Oh, he's not hurt. There's no way the San Antonio Spurs misdiagnosed him. Oh, okay. Well, what happened then? After now that we look back on it. He got misdiagnosed. He had a tough injury, and he was upset. He demanded a trade, but he personally took some hits. We saw Paul George demanding being out of with the Pacers. He personally took some hits. We saw LeBron James say, you know something, I ain't cut out for this. I'm not this villain stuff after losing to Dallas, you know, that first final there in Miami. These guys are not cut out to be ridiculed and critiqued and booed for not for their playing, just for them trying to control their destination of in the NBA, where they want to go and where they want to play.
One thing you've taught me, C, no matter how unfair I find it to be, the fan will never empathize with the player.
Never. And the athlete shouldn't ask for empathy. What he should ask is try to understand. And that's the part I never think they will get there. I'm a fan, and I can't get there. If I didn't have my history in sports, I wouldn't be able to relate to it.
And what we know is that while guys might be criticized for where they choose to go in free agency, fans these days don't criticize you just for leaving your team in free agency. LeBron got criticized for the way he picked Miami and the pep rally and all that.
Changing the NBA.
Right, but nobody was pre-criticizing LeBron that he would have the audacity to leave Cleveland. Or and when he left Miami the second time, or when he went back to Cleveland, nobody criticized LeBron there. Kevin Durant, when he left, he got criticized for where he went. But guys that wait till free agency and make a decision, people don't kill him for that. But Dwight Howard, when he was under contract with the Magic and said, I'm not happy, I want to be moved, that was the beginning of Dwight Howard's reputation changing. Kyrie got, you left Kyrie out of this. Kyrie took major hits. Kawhi took major hits. We're now seeing Anthony Davis take major hits. You've got to be prepared for that, right? You've got to know if you're going to do this, that that is going to happen, and it could be uncomfortable. Now, go ahead, Steve.
And last night when he gets hurt, he's got to leave the arena because he's got no home team anymore. Every time he's playing at home, he's getting booed. Yeah. So now he's gotten a real injury, almost like Kawhi to the sense. Just bear with me. That now if he comes back to the bench, you know what the fans think? He don't want to play. He don't have a real injury. He's just faking it. So the best thing for him to do was leave the arena. If I'm him, I'm not playing anymore the rest of the season because I have a legitimate injury. I don't have to worry about the NBA finding me because I could understand the NBA and the optics and them not wanting to look bad and their rule. They can find you if you're healthy. Oh, I got an injury now. If I'm Anthony Davis, I'm getting ready to protect my name, my reputation. I'm not getting ready to go back out there anymore the rest of the basketball season.
And shouldn't that be the Pelicans' standpoint as well? Are you saying Anthony Davis shouldn't play or the Pelicans shouldn't play Anthony Davis?
I think
he's
saying both. The Pelicans
were not in a position until yesterday to not play him.
Right.
Based on the NBA saying that you will be fined
per every game. $100,000 per game. But even so, if I'm the Pelicans, you can't do any more half measures. The reason you're losing Anthony Davis in part is because you've done nothing
but half measures.
From the
let's just go back to the beginning. If you're Dale Demps, you own or you're running whatever job you want. Let me know what the Pelicans should have done, Nick. First steps got started.
Is be patient. Is when you draft, you mean the very beginning when he's drafted?
Yes.
When he's drafted, you have an untouchable asset. Guys cannot leave, never leave the team that drafts them for a minimum of 7 years because it's your first contract, then restricted free agency, right? So this is his 8th year with the Pelicans, and he's still under contract for his 9th year with the Pelicans. So you've got a guy for a minimum of 7 years. Be patient. It's why, by the way, I criticize the Mavericks for the move they made, because I worry it's a similar thing. You have Luka. Be patient. But they weren't. They saw how good he was after year one. They traded lottery picks so they could get Drew Holiday. That all of a sudden put, and then they overspent on guys like Omer Asik because, hey, let's try to make the playoffs right now. And that put a ceiling on you. You then tried to go back and say, all right, now we're going to be patient. But now the clock's ticking. You then said, okay, now we're going to hurry it up again because we're going to lose Anthony Davis. Let's trade Buddy Hield and other picks. Buddy Hield, by the way, pretty damn good player
Sacramento,
at this point,
yes,
to bring in Boogie Cousins. But you did a half measure with that because Boogie got hurt. You know Anthony Davis wants you to keep Boogie. No, we're going to let him walk. So, and then this summer, You weren't honest with yourself that you had two options. Do everything you can to keep Anthony Davis or sell at his highest value with 2 years left on a contract where every team in the league would be interested. Because it's not a rental. It's 2 years. Like, 2 years to sell it on a guy, Anthony Davis, on your city. 2 years to win a championship. Instead, another half measure. And then at the trade deadline, another half measure. You either trade him or you hold a press conference the day he makes the demand and you say, do not call us. Don't worry about reverse tampering with the Lakers trying to ruin their season. Just say, he's going to be here. And you know what? This summer, we're not trading him either, even if that's a lie. Like, just go all in
I like
on
that.
Maintaining the stability of your organization. Everything they've done has been a half measure. The full measure at this point, NBA, we got 23 games left. You want to find us 100 grand a game, that's $2.3 million. Here's the check, but he's not playing again. Because we cannot risk a significant injury to where we now can't get Jason Tatum if he's available. We can't get all the Lakers package. We can't have a wild card team come in and offer things. The half measures have to stop for New Orleans. And they did. Anthony put him in a tough spot. But this started almost a decade ago with mismanagement of the team.
So, yes or no, do we see Anthony Davis in a Pelicans uniform again?
No, he's done.
I think he's done, too.
Coming up, is Kyler Murray the best quarterback in the draft? That's next on First Things First. In 2 days, the greatest event in motorsports is back. The Daytona 500 kicking off the 2019 NASCAR season. Sunday, 2:30 Eastern, with the pre-race beginning at 1, only on Fox.
I got future Hall of Famer Julian Edelman. He's the Grand Marshal.
Oh, he is. You're right about that, future Hall of Famer.
They're going to have to put him on a couple boxes of ladders.
He's going to be a Patriot Hall of Famer. That's true.
Oh, yeah. Nice red jackets.
We'll talk Kyler Murray in a second, but first, from last night's action, Pelicans Thunder, Frank Jackson driving to the bucket for the big dunk.
There you go. Liz, hey, Raymond Felton, speaking of half measures, what are you doing? He's just jumping out of the
Raymond
way.
Raymond Felton is not known for defense. Typically known to be a little pudgy around the midsection.
Yeah, he was there. Takes a lot to get that midsection out of there. He eats some desserts now.
What? Hawks and Knicks. It's hard to be a pudgy point guard. To John Collins. Nice little alley-oop.
John Collins. He going to be on some most improved player ballots, or he's going to be on, he's one of the more surprising players in the league, I should say, is maybe the better way to put it. John Collins has been a bright spot along with Trae Young for the Hawks this year.
Dark horse, slam dunk. Watch him. Now, if he can get the ball to go down, I believe he's going to have a lot of dunks, but a lot of times big guys, they don't finish the dunk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a finish, though.
Magic, Hornets, Terrence Ross, driving baseline, delivers the most unsanitary dunk of the night.
Now, he used to do stuff like this in college. He was a high flyer. Haven't seen this.
He had a nice little stint in T-Dot in Toronto. Now he's in Orlando. I thought he was going to be moved at the deadline. I thought a contender was going to try to go get Terrence Ross. Instead, he's going to hang out in the Magic Kingdom.
Purell.
Jenna, stop it.
To the NFL draft now.
Engage.
The two most intriguing quarterback prospects coming out this year are Ohio State's Dwayne Haskins and Heisman winner Kyler Murray from Oklahoma. One former NFL scout had Haskins ahead of Murray in his initial rankings. But if you know the way time works, it's a long way till the NFL draft in April. CeCe, which of these two are better set up for immediate success? Would it be Kyler or Dwayne?
I got to go with Dwayne Haskins. I think he's going to be a better pro, and it's just not for his height. I believe his ability to build all aspects of the passing game. He doesn't have to rely on play action. He doesn't have to be a pure drop back. He can run any type of system that you want your quarterbacks to be able to run. He has a big enough body. He has a lightning arm. I mean, he has the type of, when you see him throw the football, you're like, oh, man, that ball looks different. He throws a very tight spiral, can play in bad weather, has a decent-sized hand. I'm looking forward to seeing what his hand size is at the combine because you like a hand around 10 and a quarter at least. I like what he did in his one season as a starter, throwing the ball to all parts of the field, blitz hot. If you blitz him, he can get rid of the football. He is a decent athlete, but he is a pure drop back, throw the ball down the field. He's similar to, as his coach Ryan Day compared him to Matty Ice there in Atlanta and Sam Bradford. Not the same motion as a Sam Bradford, but very accurate with the football. So I expect him to be only get better. This is first year as a starter. Man, in 3 or 4 years, I believe Dwayne Haskins is going to be taking people. Man, they're going to be surprised by what he does in pro football.
To me, this is an easy one. The only knock on Haskins is the lack of experience, and that's Kyler Murray is that knock as well.
Same
it's
thing.
Not like Kyler Murray has a wealth of experience. He doesn't. Dwayne Haskins, as far as the throwing numbers, was better across the board than Kyler Murray. Dwayne Haskins was the best thrower of the football in college football this year, and he did it for a university that historically, it is damn near impossible to put up those types of numbers.
Yes.
In fact, I understand some people have hesitation if that school has never produced quality pros. I look at it a little differently. I don't hold against Kyler that we saw the quarterback the year before him in that system with that coach win a Heisman and do those things, but it's not a mark in his favor. The fact that Dwayne Haskins doing this at schools. See, the last quarterback to go in the first round of the NFL draft from your school was who?
Art Schleister.
In what, before I was born, right, in 82?
82, I mean, it was a long time ago. And then also, if you take that outside of Ohio State, look at the Big Ten. The last time that conference had a quarterback drafted, Kerry Collins being in the first round. Right. So, yes, he has overcome. This is not the Big Ten it was 20 years ago. A lot better skilled guys, a lot more speed at DB and wide receiver than we've seen ever in the history of the Big Ten.
You mentioned Matt Ryan and Sam Bradford. On NFL.com, the comp they had, I'm curious what you think of this, was Drew Bledsoe. Does that register with you at all?
I don't think he throws the ball down the field like Drew did. I think he's a better athlete than Drew Bledsoe. Drew Bledsoe
was a statue.
He could not run at all. I do see, though, as far as the throwing motion, because he does have a little bit. Typically, if you can draw an imaginary line from the time the quarterback decides to take his left hand off the ball, and see if this has a loop in it. Typically, you want that ball to come straight down and up. Him and Drew Bledsoe, when they let it go, there's a loop to them getting around to generate power. So I could see why a pro scout would compare him to Drew Bledsoe.
What does Kyler Murray have or do that Dwayne Haskins doesn't?
Kyler Murray is an excellent, elusive athlete. Yeah. Runner.
Don't listen to some other commentators because they are not the same type of athlete, even though both of them are African American.
Right. I mean, listen, Dwayne Haskins is not a runner at all. I know you said he has some ability to do it, but
yes.
He would not be drafted based on his running ability whatsoever. For Kyler, it's one of the big reasons he won the Heisman. Now, listen, I think he had 42 touchdowns, 7 picks. Mm-hmm. He threw 4,000 yards. He had an excellent passer in the college level as well. But a ton of his ability is what we're seeing right there. That Haskins had 180 rushing yards in his career.
This is the thing. Don't think small person, small arm. Kyler has a big-time arm. Now, if I was comparing him to anyone else in the draft besides Haskins, I would say he's got a stronger arm. But there's a number of things that he does better than Haskins. His dropback's in the pocket. He's quicker on his feet. He gets back to the top of his drop quicker and is on his toes. That's part of being short and also how he's been trained. I believe Haskins will get better at that, getting back 3 steps, 5 steps, 7 steps, getting back quicker. Also, Kyler is better at throwing the ball on the run, especially throwing the ball going to his left. So if you move Kyler out of the pocket, he's going to be more accurate than Haskins in those areas. Most young quarterbacks, especially right-handers, are not very good scrambling or rolling out to their right. All of them are weaker going to their left. Kyler is better at Haskins at this point in his career.
The things that involve mobility are the things that Kyler gets check marks in, no doubt. The thing that you said at the very beginning that I think can't be overlooked is Haskins is not at all, I believe, system dependent. Like, whomever drafts him is not going to have to drastically rework what they do.
I think a lot like Josh Rosen last year and Sam Darnold. We felt comfortable in any type of system that they would have been drafted in the league that they could be successful.
Can both of these guys start in the league next year?
Haskins should be starting, even though he's still young. Depends on what teams he goes to. If he goes to the Giants and the Giants sit him a year or something behind Eli, that would probably be the best situation for him. We saw Lamar Jackson as a dual threat. We saw him come in. Nick predicted it. He will be starting this season. Yeah. So
nobody sits anymore.
Yeah. I think the Dolphins might move on Kyler Murray, and if he goes there, he's going to start.
Nobody sits anymore. I mean, Patrick Mahomes sat because Alex Smith was there, and maybe that helped him. Maybe he would have been as great as he was in year 2 and year 1. But everybody plays. Everyone says we're going to be patient. We're not going to play him. We're going to wait. And then it's week 5, and the rookie's playing.
Yeah, Dorsey said that. And so look at what happened to Baker Mayfield.
Everybody plays if they're a first-round pick.
Take a break. Coming up is KD laying the groundwork to join the New York Knicks. That's next on First Things First. It's time for your AT&T wake-up call. The hometown kid, Steph Curry, is the overwhelming favorite to win the 3-point shootout this weekend, but it is a crowded field, one which includes Buddy Hield, Devin Booker, Dirk, Steph's little brother. Nick, will Steph take home the title?
Buddy Hield. Listen, man, this is a big pressure moment for Steph. Steph don't love them pressure moments, man. All the crowd after. What, see?
Man, you're such a hater. Man.
I'm not a hater. You know what? He's the greatest shooter ever in the easier circumstances. Buddy Hield. 46% from 3 this year. Buddy doing it in obscurity in my wife's hometown, Sacramento.
Oh, man.
Buddy Hield.
Who else hometown is it, Nick?
My wife's sister? I don't know. Who? Oh, I was talking about Sacramento. You meant Charlotte. Sorry. We're talking about Charlotte. Steph Curry. That's his hometown. Curry. That's why I'm saying he's under pressure.
Yeah, but who else's hometown is it?
Kemba Walker.
Who else?
Seth. I don't know.
Yeah, his brother.
I don't know if that's true. Was Seth born when they still lived in Charlotte?
Yeah, but it's not good for my story if you don't agree with me, nitwit.
So you're going Seth Curry?
Yeah, I'm going with the brother, man, for the upset.
You're
supposed to be
really well.
I apologize.
That was a lob. You came down with the ball and traveled.
You're right.
My game.
You're right.
Back to last night. Good news. Russell Westbrook had 44 points and picked up his 11th straight triple-double. Bad news. The Thunder lost to the Pelicans. Nick, what went wrong for them yesterday?
Really bizarre game. Russ played extraordinary, super efficient from the field. I know Paul George, he scored 28. It was on nearly 30 shots, so he wasn't very efficient.
Nope.
Nerlens Noel played well for him, but they played no defense. Listen, the Thunder, who made the All-Star game, were ready for it. And the Thunder, who didn't make the All-Star game, maybe they enjoyed their pre-All-Star night in New Orleans and then maybe go from New Orleans down to the Caribbean. They were thinking about that. It's a tough loss for a Thunder team that we were talking about. How far up the standings can they inch over the last few weeks?
I mean, man, this was a huge loss, huge disappointment. It seems like Russ was not the only one he was not the All-Star game.
Right.
The rest of the team, I don't know what they were thinking. And I don't think they were expecting the Pelicans, who lost their last game by 30, to be even show up on the court.
Correct. Julius Randle was outstanding for them yesterday.
Another former Laker just developing, D'Angelo Russell.
Yep.
To the Celtics now, they beat the Pistons on Wednesday night. They improved to 9-2 now when Kyrie Irving does not play. However, Danny Ainge said it is completely illogical and it makes no sense to think they are better without their star point guard. See, do you agree with Danny?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, you know, we're all in relationships and we know that Danny and Kyrie, we know they're engaged. When you're engaged, you say different things than when you're married.
Right.
Because when you're engaged, you can get away with those things from being married because you're trying to get married.
Right. When you're engaged, you might lie to keep the other person happy is what you're saying.
Yep, absolutely. Might buy him a bad ring or something. Nick, you know, do things like that. It's Jenna embellish. You know how we do when we're engaged. We do better once we get married. They're not married. And the team is better without Kyrie.
Listen, it is totally illogical. Just like C's tortured analogy there, which he's going to bring up day after day until this damn thing happens.
You're the one that brought the fake ring.
You had a bad engagement, bro.
I had a great engagement. What did you say?
It wasn't.
What did you just say?
Nothing. I thought it was a fake ring.
Listen, Kyrie's the best player on the team. For some reason, they win more when he's out than when he's in.
Oh my God.
What did you just say?
Literally nothing. Finally, Kevin Durant. CeCe told me Kevin Durant continues to be bombarded with questions about rumors he's joining the Knicks. But according to reports, infrastructure is being laid down for KD to sign with New York. What?
Yeah, Jenna, sometimes those rumors, they're the truth. People just don't want to admit to them. I mean, there has been intel out there with KD. And let's just talk about just from a business standpoint. KD is doing some phenomenal stuff. And if he had not gone to Golden State, which in doing that, he created a lot of people who would not like him. He did not have that type of reputation before he went there. He only got it because he decided to go there. But off the court, he has done some phenomenal things from a charity standpoint. He's got some awesome business concepts moving forward. Like, man, he's going to make an awful lot of money off the basketball court.
And
where do you want to do these things? And these are some of the things that these players have to... LeBron didn't go to L.A. just for the Lakers. Oh, no. The business component, what they're trying to do beyond basketball, then it played into, oh, yeah, I need to do that from Los Angeles. And I believe that KD is going to happen in here in New York, Nick.
The single greatest generator of black generational wealth in this country is the National Basketball Association. Not rich black people, but generational mogul. You're talking 100 millionaire type of situations is the NBA. And Kevin Durant, I remember you looked at me very kind of cross-eyed when I first said the best thing the Warriors have going for him in the recruitment of Kevin Durant is not winning a third straight title.
Nope.
It's not him getting his third straight MVP. It's like, hey, man.
That new arena.
We have this new arena. And some of the richest people in the world are going to be courtside. Stay for one extra year. Get 41 games to hobnob with them afterwards. Make those contacts. Get seed money for your venture capital stuff that you're doing with Rich Kleinman. Kevin, NBA fans need to recognize that for the echelon of player, of which there's only a very select few, mm-hmm. LeBron, KD, Steph, and that might be the list, it is not just about basketball decisions right. anymore. It is about where can I build my empire? And Kevin Durant and Rich Kleiman have been planning to build their empire in New York City. Now, it's an added bonus that the basketball part of it is a legacy builder as well if he holds mm-hmm. up, if he does what he thinks he can do. But they are, that show they do on digitally on ESPN Plus is not about basketball. It's called The Boardroom. Mm-hmm. It's about Shark Tank stuff. Like, Kevin Durant is interested in building a non-basketball $250 million industry around him, and New York City is the place he is going to do it.
We have this all but set that he's coming here to New York City. Would you be surprised if anything other than that scenario happens?
I would be surprised, but as we've seen with these athletes, they can change their mind. But from a business standpoint, how he's getting things set up, no different than how LeBron had everything yes. set up. When LeBron announced the first day of free agency, he didn't have to buy a house. He already had a couple houses. They already had stuff set up.
I love what Rich Kleiman is doing here yes. in New York now.
He already had people who had been in Los Angeles a couple years,
yeah.
his business partners. So this is where it's going. And these athletes that are been invited into this rare air, this is new. I mean, this is new to the world of sports, and the NBA and the players are taking advantage. And as Nick said, there's only a handful that are invited into this hierarchy, and they're taking advantage of it. If there were guys in all of sports that I could pick, okay, I'm going to pick their portfolio of what they're going to potentially do when they stop playing either football, baseball, or basketball, it would be between LeBron and what he's going to do ultimately being movies, shows,
right.
Agency owning with Clutch Sword, owning the team. Kevin Durant I would have a hard time because yes. I believe that what he's doing is on the cutting edge and it's going to be a lot of fun and very successful.
I have to believe there's a small element of this, which is LeBron's going to set up his empire here. I'm going to go on the other coast and do the same thing in New
smart.
York. And if that happens, which team wins the title first, the Knicks or the Lakers?
Ooh.
Oh, that's one Man, that's hell of a question. And a lot would have to do with who gets the Robin first.
Because they both need a Robin.
They would both need
a
someone
Robin.
Else. My money would be on the franchise that has won a bunch of titles in the last 45 years and has the better player in the Lakers. But the Knicks would have a longer time horizon to do it.
This would, I feel better, and I don't know in my lifetime if I've ever said that. I feel better about the Knicks ownership because the Knicks ownership has given Scott Perry in the front office free reign to do whatever they want. James Dolan is not interfering. They cleared the books. They don't have any bad contracts. And you know something, too? They definitely got a better coach. So for me, I'm going to go with the Knicks and KD to win nice. A championship over the Lakers because I believe they have more stable pieces. And Kyrie wants to play here, and he can be an unrestricted free agent. So you wouldn't have to necessarily trade for another guy. So I think it's easier to do. Scott Perry, the general manager, let's not forget. He worked in the front office in Seattle when they drafted Mr. Kevin Durant. All right?
Yeah.
That is the more than the business. That right there. Hold on to that nugget. There's a reason why I get off of Chris Stapp. Why? Because I might have a relationship with a guy who's a better player in the NBA.
And one last point before we move on. You said something at the very beginning that I want to put my stamp on as well because I'm critical of Kevin Durant on this show and critical of some of the things he's done. What you said about what he's doing charitably cannot be overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
He is it gets minor headlines, but the things he's doing for young people in basically every city that he's lived in, from the city and still doing it, and we are talking about tens of millions of dollars being Impressive. Poured into communities
yep.
that other people have forgotten about and don't give a damn about. That's the other reason why when I said the generational creating black generational wealth, it's so important because people then put that money back into where they're from. And Durant's been overshadowed in that regard by LeBron as well, and unfairly, because what Durant does charitably
right.
is second to none in the NBA. And people, no matter where he goes, he'll keep doing that.
All right. Let's switch gears a little bit. Big news for Lamar Jackson this week. Turns out he will not be looking over his shoulder this season. The starting job The Baltimore Ravens is his. That after the Ravens agreed to send Joe Flacco off to Denver. Lamar led the Ravens to the playoffs last season, going 6-1 down the stretch. Baltimore's offensive coordinator says he's already at work on a Lamar-friendly offense. CeCe, you trust Lamar as the starter for a full season now?
I trust Baltimore. It's an organization. They're going to put some good players. They got their head coaching situation resolved in bringing Harbaugh back, and I believe that was critical. You need to have an awesome defense. You're going to play this style. I'm not even going to get to the offensive side of Lamar yet because I believe all these other things. 99% of all the players I've ever seen come into this league, only 29,000 have ever played in 99 years. They're system players. I was a system player. And Lamar's got to make sure that the system works for him. Baltimore has supported their best players no matter what they needed them to do, that being running backs, that being offensive linemen, that being defensive linemen, Ray Lewis linebackers, Ed Reed. They put the type of players around them that they can compete and play at a high level. And I believe Baltimore will do that. Greg Roman as an offensive coordinator. He's been around Baltimore where they had to manage the game. They're going to run the ball, some play action pass, make some big plays, and play to our special teams because Baltimore has two of the best kickers that we have in professional football. And having Greg Roman to design a game plan around a quarterback with this skill set and what he learned working there in San Francisco with Colin Kaepernick, I believe that will benefit Lamar. But there's some other things that I believe in more and how they're going to play defense in Baltimore and how John Harbaugh and that organization is going to support this star rising forward with, I need some help on the outside. I need another weapon wide receiver. I believe they have a very good tight end who's emerging as elite, very, very fast, good hands, and they have to make him a legitimate threat every week. Last week, there weren't weeks where the tight end was going to be effective. So all these things in place, yes, I do believe in what they have going on in Baltimore.
So listen, the single biggest adjustment Lamar's going to have to make, in addition to becoming more accurate as a passer, is learn to be effective running half as much as he did last year. Last year, in eight games, he rushed the ball 128 times. That is more than Mike Vick ever did in a season. That is more than Russell Wilson ever did in a season. It is almost identical to Cam Newton's career high for a season. It was in eight games. Wow. 128 divided by eight. So it's 16 times per game is what he rushed the football. He's got to be able to do it eight maximum. Now, you mentioned the tight end. They got a couple tight ends. They got Mark Andrews, who was very effective last year. But their first-round pick last year was Hayden Hurst, who had out of South Carolina, stress fracture in his foot, didn't play much. My question to you quickly on this is, if you're developing an offense for Lamar, and you have two tight ends you like, you know you have Crabtree and Willie Snead under contract, double tight end, one running back, maybe two wide receivers, you're in a heavy formation with tight ends that can catch the football. I know you like the idea of the wide receivers occasionally being on the same side of the field so Lamar can lock in on one side of the football field.
Yes, that's what Brian Billick helped Randall Cunningham when he struggled reading coverage, put both wideouts on the same side, keep the quarterback. He's only reading half the field.
And so there are things that they can do. I think the tight end spot's important for them. We know Gus Edwards was one of the surprises of last season. But the other thing that helped that defense is something that I don't think they're going to have to the same degree next year, which is once he took over, they were 35 minutes a game time of possession because all they were doing is running the football. When Lamar's not going to run it quite as much, that time possession might still be good, but it might, instead of being 35, might be 32. So the defense is going to be asked to a little bit more than it was asked to do last year en route to being a top two defense.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, is Earl Thomas about to join the Cowboys? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Bart Scott. Time for say what? Jimmy Butler won't be on the floor during the All-Star game. However, he's finding a way to entertain himself. Say what?
Jimmy Cash in here getting fitted, suited, and booted. You hear me?
I put this for my own.
Why the Western motif?
That looked like a jacket that Jim Carrey wore in a mask. What the hell is he doing?
Come on, Bart Scott. Do you look back on your playing days, one of those fits that you're like, man?
Well, you got them Steve Harvey suits, you know what I'm saying? You used to have, like, I used to tell my boys you got so many pleats in your pants that you could hide a shotgun and nobody would know. You know
what I'm saying? Jimmy Butler is a big country music fan.
Oh,
so
he is?
Perhaps, yes, he is. I thought I'd throw that out there. So perhaps this just
That's why he's always angry.
He's too angry to like country. That's happy music.
He's heart-stricken. He's heartbroken. He's
heartsick. He gave himself a bolo tie from our guy, Philip Rivers. to really complete the ensemble.
Yeah. Phillip passing them down to his kids.
See, you know what it reminds me of? Mel Blunt.
Oh, yeah, he's a real cowboy.
Mel Blunt.
Yeah, Mel, he owns a bunch of horses.
About the same height
almost
as Jimmy
Butler. Always
Butler's
has on a cowboy hat. He's one of my favorite Hall of Famers of all time.
Speaking of cowboys.
Oh, well done, Bart. Look at
very
Bart
nice.
The show.
Little Barts and Crafts there. Back to the NFL.
Now we can just get him to shut up on time.
Oh, my goodness. Leave Bart alone.
Earl Thomas had a successful short-lived season in Seattle last year, one that ended early when he suffered a season-ending injury. Thomas posted on the gram he's waiting with anticipation during free agency amid speculation he'll sign with his hometown Cowboys. As an aside, and not to be dramatic, Thomas enrolled his children in school in Austin, Texas this offseason. But as I learned this morning in our morning meeting, Austin is like 1,000 hours
Listen, Austin's 3 hours outside of Dallas. People should know. But go ahead.
He's rich. He can take a helicopter.
Okay, yeah.
What, Bart, would Earl Thomas bring to the Cowboys' defense if this all works out the way he'd like it to?
Well, he'll bring a center fielder, right? When you think about Heap and you think about Xavier, they only had two interceptions combined. Earl Thomas is a guy that can get an interception and flip the field. He's explosive. He's in the box, but he also can get off the hashes. So he's very versatile. I think he provides that energy. He's one of these spark plug type of players. My only issue is how are they going to pay him? Because when I look at the Dallas Cowboys and I look at their roster, I look at four of their top paid, highest paid players are linemen. You got to address the Ezekiel Elliott contract.
Mm-hmm.
You got to address Cooper contract. Yeah. You got to address Dak Prescott contract. And No, they have their best defensive player.
DeMarcus Lawrence
is up for contract as well. So I don't know.
Yeah, what about their corner? Byron Jones. He's up. His option got to be exercised, right? At cornerback.
Absolutely. No, wait, 15, 16. Yeah, you're right. He's getting a big raise. He's under contract, but he's getting a big raise.
Now we know they're going to get a little salary cap relief because they're probably going to release Sean Lee because Vander Esch and Jalen Smith are going to be the guys that's going to run the middle of the field. But I just don't know how they get it done. So if Earl Thomas is going to give him a hometown discount because there's no state taxes.
Well, listen, they're also release Allen Hurns, but a lot of the money they are going to spend is on keeping the same team as last year. They're not in salary cap hell like they've been in years past. They got off finally the Tony Romo dead money. They took that Dez Bryant hit all at once so they wouldn't have future dead money there. The only notable dead money is actually thanks to Jason Witten's impromptu retirement right after he had gotten a new deal. So cap-wise, it looks like they're in decent shape. But not when Zeke goes from a few million to 16. Not when Amari goes from where he's at to 16 million. DeMarcus Lawrence was already a big cap number, but because of his franchise tag, but they're going to want to bring him back. So I think they could squeeze Earl Thomas in. Now, to answer your question just quickly, what he would do is he would do what he did for Seattle, which is be a dominant defensive player who's still not 30 years old. Mm-hmm. He's played 9 years. He's not 30 years old yet. He came out of University of Texas young. Like, I have no doubt about his talent, and tell me if you disagree. A broken leg is not the type of injury where I'm like, oh, well, I'm not sure about his durability. It's not a ligament. It's not something that I think is likely to recur.
No, it's not the broken leg. It's the two other injuries before that. He's gotten into a lot of horrific, I'm talking about dramatic injuries, collisions. And, man, this is a collision sport until you start being on the bad end of the collision. So that part I do get concerned about. I believe he's a great player. I believe he's underrated as a leader. As you said earlier, he doesn't have limitations. You said, oh, man, he gets off the hash plate. Man, he can play cover two, cover four. He can play in the box. He can guard a tight end. He can guard a running back. But for the disappointment to the Cowboys, I don't think he ends up there. I think he's moving his family back to Austin, Texas, where he went to school. Austin, Texas, one of the great cities to live in the United States. And I believe that there's people think because last year he talked to Jason Garrett. He wants to be. But when you don't have the room, why did he move to Dallas compared to moving to Austin? So for me, I don't believe he's going to be on the Cowboys. I believe he moves his family back to Austin where he went to school and was a great place to live.
And he does repeatedly off-season workouts at UT. And as anyone knows with small children, like if you want to bring your kids with you, you got to put them in school. I mean, it's the middle of February. Like he wants to be around his kids, good. And so you got to put them in school. Listen, I lived in Texas. Austin is close to San Antonio, relatively close to Houston.
Yeah.
Dallas is not, you're not commuting from Austin to Dallas. Like, that's not a thing. And so, I think he's the best available defensive free agent. I know some people think it's DeMarcus Lawrence. Whoa. Some people think it's Dee Ford. Jadeveon Clowney, if he hits free agency. I think he adds something. There's, to me, a lack of quality safeties in this league. Mm-hmm. The Cowboys' weakest part of their defense was safety. But you can talk about the Kansas City Chiefs' weakest part of their defense was safety, with Eric Berry not coming back till the end of the year. We talk even the teams, New Orleans Saints, we like a lot of their defense, but do we trust their safeties? There's a lot. Right now, just like in my eyes, offensive linemen, there's not enough good ones to go around. I don't think there's enough good safeties to go around. And he's been one of the best, if not the best, for almost a decade now.
But it's about the durability, right? The durability. He's been in a lot of collisions. He's going to be 30 pretty soon, and he's coming off an injury. How much can he demand knowing that he's coming off an injury? And that's going to be the biggest key. So it's going to have to take somebody that's going to pay him off his reputation, not off what he did last year. He played very well last year, but you just don't know. You're going to have time. Mm-hmm. He's going to be learning a new system. Is he a system guy? We don't think so, but he's been in cover three the majority of his career.
Yes.
He's been a guy that's been off the off the hashes, closing in the middle of the field and inserting into the box, taking away linebacker, taking away running backs and tight ends. Can he make the adjustment? We don't know, but it's going to be somebody that's going to give him a chance. But are they going to give him a one-year deal, or are they going to give him the long-term deal that he was searching
seeking
for?
With Seattle.
Yeah, seeking with Seattle. So that's the big thing. Yeah, if I'm a team, I give him a three-year deal with a lot of incentives in it. He's going to be looking for anywhere north of $10 million a year. He's making 10 last year, and he was upset about that. He's going to be looking to be paid more like Eric Berry, that's going to be closer to 13 or 14. Can you afford that?
But the Cowboys actually have a need at that position.
Huge need.
And if they want to shore up their defense, maybe they do go ahead and they make a move and do that. What?
The good thing is, the bad thing is that Dak played good enough, just good enough, that you have to pay him over $100 million.
Yes.
And that's going to take about 10 to 14% of your cap up. DeMarcus Lawrence, if you decide to keep him, well, he's going to be paid top of the market. You think about what Aaron Donald just got last year. He's going to be looking where anywhere from north of $18, $19 million.
And these are all guys that you drafted and you developed. So they have a number of needs. But will he be a priority? And I don't think they'll make him a priority. They'll do what they've done. They will get safeties for cheap to fill in around these other spots where they have to have guys who they've drafted now up for that second contract and develop them.
If my numbers are right, the Cowboys, after the draft and after they re-sign these guys, should have around $12 million to spend on outside free agents. The question would be, do you want all of it to go to this guy, or do you want to bring in two or three $4 to $6 million a year players? Like, that's the discussion the Cowboys would have to have. Like, do we need to add another tight end if we don't get one in the draft? Do we want to do it through free agency?
No first round draft picks as well.
Oh yeah, that's a great point.
They gave it up for Cooper.
And so, how are we going to address the other holes on our team? Because I don't think I do think they could make the money work with Earl Thomas, but then that will be their one and only substantial free agent addition.
Well, make a trade for one, because they got they got Travis Frederick coming back. They can get Collins out there, trade somebody, because linemen are hard to get and they have a surplus.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Before we let you go, we have a quick word from Spotify. Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including Oprah's Super Soul Conversations, The Tim Ferriss Show, Happier with Gretchen Rubin, and The Nutrition Diva, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and how to feel balanced while meditating. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can even go download episodes for those times that you're trying to go off the grid, to get all that newfound balance into your life. So start the year off right with podcasts on Spotify. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Before we let you go, we have a quick word from Spotify.